Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, simply the best for less at windowskansascity.com.
Our conversation is with Kansas State Athletics Director Gene Taylor, a man dealing with some issues he never dreamed of when he took the job at K-State. 35 football players out for the first game because of COVID tracing, not positive cases. Declining revenues in the department because there's almost no ticket sales. And a bunch of upset fans because the BLM logo was on K-State's uniforms for the first game, and folks thought it was a political statement, not a sentiment. Through a few rough weeks, Taylor is still proud the Big 12 is playing. He knows it was the right thing to do. Our conversation today is brought to you by Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, and Excelsior Springs. Mike Robinson and his team make it easy for you, especially online where you can shop, click, and drive at robertsrobinson.com. GMC, we are professional grade. Ron Buck and Buck Roofing, an official sponsor of K-State Athletics, online at rbuckroofing.com. Ron Buck's team is available 24/7 for emergencies, so you can sleep well knowing Buck Roofing fixed the roof over your head. Give Ron a call for a minor job or a free roof inspection or a complete new roof, or if you're building a home. He's the best in the biz. 913-384-2680 for Buck Roofing, online at rbuckroofing.com. And Fish Window Cleaning, 913-648-2500. Online at fishwindowcleaning.com/KC. Jared and Steve over there are going to hook you up. They got a whole bunch of residential customers really happy this time of year when we have these beautiful late fall days. Just gorgeous outside. You got clean windows. Your house just looks better. They can hook you up with a regularly scheduled program that's going to make everything more bright and beautiful when you look outside your home. And for businesses, you've really got an obligation to look your best for every customer that walks through the door. Fish Window Cleaning makes it happen. Call Jared at 913-648-2500. That's 913-648-2500 or online at fishwindowcleaning.com/KC. Gene Taylor, AD at Kansas State, is our conversation. Hit it!
Sports, politics, life. Joslyn's Jewelry presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues.
Our conversation today is with Gene Taylor, the director of athletics at Kansas State University, and he has got his hands full. They have been hit hard with COVID and COVID tracing in the athletic department. We're down an awful lot of football players against Arkansas State, and I know that they're hopeful that they're going to get the game in with Oklahoma Saturday, national TV again. Gene Taylor, kind enough to join us. Hello, Mr. Taylor. How are you, sir?
Well, Kevin, it's good to hear your voice and good to be on with you. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to doing this maybe more than once or twice.
Thank you so much for your time. And in full disclosure, I want to let all the listeners know this. When my radio show abruptly ended June 29th or whatever day it was in 2019, I had a lot of people in athletics and sports reach out to me via phone call or text or whatever it may be. You were the first. And I cannot thank you enough when you reached out to me, and certainly a bunch of people did over time, but I'll never forget that the first thing that popped up on my phone was Gene Taylor, and we know each other. We're not, you know, really close or anything like that, but I just thought it was really classy and professional, and I can't thank you enough.
Well, I appreciate it, and you've been so good to us and K-State and me since the minute I stepped foot here, so appreciate it and look forward to more conversation.
Okay, let's have this conversation. How hard is it to run an athletic department in the age of COVID? This has got to be insanely crazy.
You know, it really is, and it's every day's a new day. And, you know, we're so conditioned of, well, this is how we've always done it, or this is how we're going to do it. And things have just fallen into, for a number of years, just pretty much a smooth operation. You know, you have your bumps and, you know, road bumps here and there. But the thing that has made it somewhat easy is everybody's going through it together. And so when we talk to our Big 12 athletic directors or colleagues across the country, you know, every day we're either, if we don't know what we're doing, somebody else maybe has an answer. We can share conversations, and it feels a little bit better to go through it with your colleagues that are facing the same thing. But it is different, and you don't have answers like you maybe typically would. I've been in the business, you know, for a number of years now, and you can kind of anticipate, well, if this happens, we can do this. And you just don't have that option right now. It's just, it really is. You're not planning 3 to 5 or even 2 months or 6 months down the road. You're planning what's the next day going to be like, or the next week is about as far as you can go.
On my podcast yesterday, I predicted here within the next couple of weeks, we're going to hear a lot of people in the national media who didn't want football to be played. And I was stunned. You know, I know how the media are. I know that I'm an outcast, all right? I'm very conservative. This podcast is conservative in sports and all those things. So I'm an outcast in the media, and I've been an outcast for 35 years with the people I work with, but I was surprised how many media people in sports were sort of openly rooting for there to be no football, like it would help some cause, or maybe they thought it was the right thing or whatever. I believe in the next couple of weeks, if what happens in the SEC is a mirror of what's happened in the Big 12 and we see teams that can't play, or Kansas State has 30-some players unavailable when they play Arkansas State, if we start to see that in the SEC, I think it will become a big story, and people around the country in the media are going to try to push a narrative that college football has failed. And I am emphatically getting in front of this, saying college football has not failed. These kids are not sick. They're not hospitalized. They're not in any great danger. Schools are going to great length to keep them off the field or out of practice if maybe they've just been exposed, not even testing positive for COVID. If the players don't like it, they can opt out. There's every opportunity on the table. And I don't know how it's all going to play out with wins and losses. It looks like it's going to be a struggle for K-State. You got a bunch of players out. But just playing football, to me, is a victory. I think college football is doing the right thing, and I'm okay with it regardless of who wins and loses this year.
Well, you know, Kevin, you make a great point, and I would say the opposite, that it has been a success because we do have, you know, procedures in place that we're not allowing these kids to play. And you're right. The numbers in terms of people with COVID are small. It's all the kids from contact tracing that we lose that we're being so cautious with to say, you know what, you can't play. And we're okay with if we have to postpone a game because we want it to be about safety. And so what's really important thing to remember is the mental health of these kids with football is that it's such a better place than without it. And where they were mentally back in June about whether we're going to play, not going to play, when we started in fall when, you know, the Big Ten canceled. I mean, I was out of practice one day when we were really looking forward to playing. The next day, the Big Ten came out and said, nope, we're not playing. You felt the kids just lost everything they had in front of them. And then when we came back out and said we're playing, they were picked up again. So there was a huge mental health part of this that, you know, we need to keep in mind because these kids want to play. And now we're not going to let them play if they're ill or if they're contact trace. And if they show any sign of anything that's lingering, they won't see the field. And we have a lot of doctors looking at us. So I think we are being safe and we are going to be successful because are we going to have all of our games in? Yeah, probably not. But we're going to play to a point where the kids get to play for some sort of championship, whether it's Big 12 or college football playoff, and they're going to feel. And plus, guess what? They get a year back. You know, I think that was a great decision. It's going to hamper us financially down the road, but it took all the worries off the table for those kids to know, you know, if I play 2 games or 6 games or 10 games, I'm still going to get my eligibility if I want to come back. And those are good decisions.
Okay, there's a history in college athletics and college football of certain schools cheating other schools. I'm not going to sit here and name schools, but how do you know that the teams you're playing are as diligent and doing as good a job as you in sitting athletes that need to sit?
Well, we both schools sign a form of attestation form that goes to, like, for instance, we signed one for Arkansas State that went to their conference office. Ours went to our conference office. And if you're found that you aren't being honest, the penalties could be severe. And you just have to trust because, you know what, nobody wants to be the school that gets, you know, an opposing school sick by playing a bunch of players. And, you know, let's be real. If somebody were to be sick and then get sicker after the game and they played them, the liability of that is through the roof. So, you know, you obviously got to trust your colleagues. We're all trying to do the right thing. We sign a form. I sign it. The coach signs it. Our athletic trainer signs it. So we put our professional reputation on the line that if we are playing kids that are sick, that we know are sick, then we could face a lot of major sanctions and trouble that we don't probably lose our jobs, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you know, I guess I'm not as concerned about somebody sick playing because I don't think anybody would do that. I mean, that's just sinister and wrong. And I think, you know, you potentially are harming someone else. When you talk about the tracing, you talk about the huge number that you have of Kansas State of athletes that you have not played. Are other schools doing that? I thought there were some pretty shaky results from Arkansas State after that game, to be honest. After the game happened, their program kind of broke down. Well, they didn't get it from your guys. We know that. What the heck was going on there?
Yeah, good question. But here's the deal that we're finding out is every local health department or, you know, county health or whatever is running their show has different interpretations of the CDC guidelines of what's contact tracing and what's not. So that's probably where you could play the game a little bit, I guess, and not necessarily, you know, maybe say, well, he really wasn't a contact racer. Let's go ahead and, but apparently, like, we self-identify, our players say, nope, this is who I talked to, this is who I was around. And the minute they say their name, they're out. 14 days, see you. They don't even get a chance to argue it. So I guess you could play that game a little bit. You just hope people aren't really doing that, but we'll see.
So this is something clearly that the NFL is not doing, and I know they're doing contact tracing at work. We've seen the little things that the NFL players wear. They know which position group they're in, who they've been around when they're at the facility. But let's be honest. These are professional football players. They go home at night. They have families. There are people over at their houses. I don't know that they're going out to dinner. I think they're being good teammates across the league. I think the NFL is doing a great job. But if the NFL started sitting players, I think this is important for people to know, because I do believe the narrative is going to be, look, college football is a mess. Look at all these kids that are out. And the general public thinks they're all sick, which is just crazy to me. If the NFL did tracing like college is and had your rule that, oh, if you were just in contact with somebody or whatever, you sit for 14 days, we'd see Patrick Mahomes miss three games and the sky would fall in. I mean, the NFL is not doing this that way, are they?
I don't believe so. I haven't really followed it closely enough as to what their threshold. Now, the other thing they're doing, I don't know if they're still testing every day. I know in the preseason they were testing every day. But you're right. You know, their world's a little different. They go home. They've got, you know, spouses and kids. And, you know, they're probably not, you know, hanging out with their roommates. And, you know, we've got players that have non-football player roommates. And those roommates are maybe not as diligent. And maybe they go down to Aggieville and come home. And so that's kind of where some of our kids are getting the positives. It's not necessarily from a teammate. It's, you know, from a roommate, maybe a girlfriend that is in a sorority. You know, so that's kind of where we're getting our positives. And, but you're right, the NFL is way different. I don't know how they're doing their contact tracing, but I think that's why they upped their you know, squad size numbers in case they did have to lose players to fill those roles.
Yeah, it's my understanding that what they're doing is they have those electronic things. They trace everybody all day, every day at Arrowhead, and if somebody comes up positive, they know exactly who they've come into contact with, and they can isolate those people right away. But it doesn't count for what they've done outside of the facility. That being said, the NFL reported in its last week, which was the week before last, in its last week of testing, 36,000 tests of players and personnel around the league, zero positives. I mean, that's just unbelievable.
That's impressive. And I think, you know, again, it's when you test every day, obviously there's, you know, a much more significant financial impact if those guys lose games or miss games. So they're probably, not that our kids aren't taking it serious, because I think they do. They want to play. So, you know, but again, they're not surrounded by more outside influences where a college athlete is, whether it's, you know, family or friends that aren't football players or girlfriends or whatever the case may be, or boyfriends in case of soccer involved, whatever the case. So it's just different. And so we are going to have, and you've seen teams, Baylor's of the world and the other teams cancel games, and let's hope we don't, so we can keep playing.
Well, I'll say this for the Big 12. You know, I don't know the Big 12 is getting a lot of credit nationwide, but the Big 12 basically stepped up and was the first to say, we're playing. Until we tell you we're not, we're playing. So stop asking. We're playing football, and this is the way this is going to go. Man, I thought it was one of the best moments ever for the Big 12 conference. Do you and the other athletic directors and presidents feel vindicated now that the Big 10 is on board, that they realize the mistake they made?
You know, as Bob Boltby said, let's not pump our chest yet. Because, you know, I think our approach was just different, and we were committed to play until somebody said you can't play, whether it was a doctor or the medical advisors. They got something that said, well, that makes us nervous, so we're not going to play. And now they've watched the ACC and us start. They know the SEC starting, the AAC conference. They started seeing football games. And I would guess the pressure on those presidents and those ADs got to a point where they're saying, we need to do something here and relook at this. And then they did. And so now they're playing. I don't know how they're ever going to get 8 games in 8 weeks, to be honest with you. But if they do, good for them. And now the Pac-12's coming out, right? I believe they're going to try to play now in November. So it'll be a weird year. And it'll be interesting to see if, you know, an Ohio State goes undefeated with 7 games or 6 games, and we're got a team that's 8-1, and who's going to get in, who's not going to get in. That's a whole other conversation today.
It is. I hope we get to that point. I hope that it's so good and we get to a point where people are arguing of who should be in the playoff and what we're going to do. It'd be good for college football. The play so far and the slate of games hasn't been particularly great. It was not a good start for Kansas State. I know you're disappointed that the team had the lead and lost it. A very thin team, but I know that, Coach Klieman and everyone at K-State, they're not going to use that as an excuse. Has it been, just generally speaking, difficult for the players to focus with some of the distractions? What kind of challenges has the team had? I've read some comments from a couple of the coaches that they had hoped for a little more out of them, maybe either focus or I don't know about preparation, but maybe intensity on that game day. They were a little disappointed that they didn't bring more in that game. Has that been hard to get out of some of these kids?
Well, I think a couple of reasons. One is it's just been so unusual. You don't have your whole team out there. Every time you come out, you know, not every time, but you got three or four guys, and all of a sudden you're playing, you know, seven offensive linemen as opposed to the 10 or 12 or 15, whatever we have. And so players are looking across going, we only have seven offensive or eight offensive linemen or whatever. You know, and all of a sudden now we're down most of our receivers. And so you're playing with – so I'm sure their focus has been a little distracted because, you know, whether you're, you know, a quarterback throwing to a receiver who's a walk-on versus, you know, Josh Youngblood or whoever might be missing out there, I'm sure that's been difficult. It hasn't been consistent day in and day out of who you're practicing with or against. I think that's been part of it. I think just – generally, you know, as you go home and you read stuff, whether it's what's going on in our country or just what's going on with other teams, are they nervous that, you know, and they get nervous about the testing each day, right? We get, you know, who's going to be missing if we test Wednesday and Sunday? And so I can see where their focus could be a little distracted. I think you've seen that with some other teams. You know, Oklahoma State supposedly had all this firepower, you know, struggled with Tulsa. I would imagine that's going to be the case most of the year with a lot of teams.
It does look like the Big 12 is either sitting more or doing something different than others. There's no way the conference is this bad. I said this about all the losses in the play that we've seen. All things being equal, if things stayed healthy, 6 weeks from now it's going to look a lot different. I mean, there's just no way, and I'm really curious to see what happens in the SEC.
You know, I'm feeling pretty confident. Again, you know, I think our kids are doing everything they can to stay healthy and you know, stay away from kind of the as much outside influence. I mean, I believe they're going to Aggieville and going out and hanging out with people they don't know. They're not being tested. So, but you just don't know. And it's not so much, like you said, it's not so much having a lot of positives. It's who is that person come in contact with? And if all of a sudden you have a position group, you have one or two in a position group and they're all roommates or, you know, they hang out a little bit, boy, it could knock out a position group pretty quickly. So I think we'll be fine, but, literally, I just kind of keep my fingers crossed till I get a text from our trainer saying, you know, we're good or we have this many positives, so or this many people are going to be out for tracing.
All right. I don't know that this has been reported, but the word on the street out there is that Kansas State this week is maybe one player away at a certain position from having to cancel the game. Is that, and this would be a position group, obviously, where there's a problem. Is that the case, or do players go two ways? Will they flip somebody over from offense to defense? How would that work, and is that true at one position? It's really close.
Yeah, I think the really only one that is within our Big 12 requirements or is the offensive lineman, you have to have seven. Defensive lineman, you have to have at least four. Internal offensive or defensive lineman, your inside tackles. And then you have to have at least one quarterback. And to my knowledge, those guys are all in pretty good shape. So I don't know where that would be coming from, but you know, I'm out of practice once, twice a week. And you know, kids are wearing their helmets. And then you're right. I mean, if all of a sudden you got some receivers back down, then you bring over some defensive backs and vice versa. If you got some defensive backs down, you throw some receivers over there and, you know, just to get through the game. So we'll see. Today will be a kind of a telltale day once we get our results. And then, you know, Friday, I think, is usually pretty good. If the Wednesday tests are good, the Friday tests are pretty good.
Where does beating Oklahoma last year rank in your finest moments since you arrived in Manhattan?
Well, I had to be right up there, although beating Kentucky in the Sweet 16 was pretty fun, too. That whole run was really fun. But, you know, I think for a lot of reasons. One, it was Chris's, you know, signature win for Chris. I think a lot of people were, you know, not sure about whether Coach Klieman could come in here and coach at this level, and beating a team like that was pretty exciting. And you know, obviously the sold out crowd. So it was a good memory, and it will always be for a long time.
When you sat down at the beginning of the year with Coach Klieman, was there any message to him like, look, we don't know how this is going to go with this stuff. Just do your best with what you have and don't really worry about this year. Because I can't imagine any athletic director or university is going to hold their coach particularly accountable for what happens in 2020. Did you ever have a discussion with him like that?
Yeah, we've had several, to be honest with you, you know. And a lot of it was just, are we going to play, not going to play? And then once we got in the season, you know, obviously we communicate regularly, you know, whether it's a formal conversation about football or just, you know, informal about just whatever. We've had a lot of conversations and, you know, but at the end of the day, he's a football coach and he wants to put our kids in a position to be successful and he wants to prepare them to the highest level. I mean, that's just what they do and that's their mindset. I just kind of have to remind him, you know, yeah, we want to do as much as we can to get as good of a football team, but this is just going to be different. And I think he gets there. It's just hard because it's just so unusual for, and again, whether it's him or any other coach across the country, that the adjustment and just the unknown each day is just so different. So I can see the frustration and the, you know, on his face, and I just have to keep reminding him, Coach, we're going to be fine. We'll get through this. We'll get through it together, and we'll come out on the other side and better for it at some point.
On top of all this, I know you've got financial issues. Every school does with what this has done. I think enrollments are down pretty much everywhere in the country. Athletic departments, obviously, you're not able to sell the tickets and have the season ticket base. I'm assuming some donors opted out of the, you know, all that they were paying this year to have the rights to certain seats and things like that. How tough are the finances? And do you believe Kansas State was in a better position going in than most to handle this going forward?
Well, I don't know better. I mean, I think we've always been an efficient department. You know, we don't have, you know, we're at the minimum number of sports. When I got here, and I'm not making an excuse because our staff's been phenomenal and they're very, very good at what they do. But we typically had in department by department, the smallest number of staff in each department. We have the smallest compliance staff. We have one of the smaller, Ahern Fund staff. We have, you know, operations staff. You know, our pay has typically not been the top of the Big 12. I'm not proud of that, but I mean, that's just kind of who we are. And so I think we've been very efficient with our dollars. We don't have a ton of debt. I think where people are getting hurt with these big schools is they've got all this TV money that they just went out and built all these facilities without the money being raised. And they've been, you know, going into, you know, millions and millions of dollars where their, you know, their debt services are $10, $15, $20 million, $25 million a year, where ours is five and a half, you know. So we are positioned, I think, better with the cuts that we made, the furloughs, the operating budget cuts that, you know, as long as we were able to play football and get some TV revenue, we're not going to be swimming in money. But I think at the end of the year, we'll be at a place where we can make up any shortfall with either some of our reserves or if we were to take a short-term, you know, a line of credit out, as opposed to these schools that have these hundreds of millions of dollars of budgets that are so deep in debt that it's harder for them.
Okay, in the first game, I know that it was the Unity game, and we saw the patches on the jerseys, the BLM patches, and I know that you heard from a lot of donors and fans and people that see that as a political organization, not an expression. I think everybody agrees Black Lives Matter. It's a perfect sentiment. That's great. It's perfect. As a political organization, some people are political. They look at that and go, uh-oh, we don't like what that stands for. They're trying to get other people elected. Man, you think sports fans are passionate. Political junkies are really passionate. I'm guessing you heard from some people, and that was only planned to be for the Unity game. You have other patches and other things on the uniform as the season goes. Is that correct?
Yeah, Kevin, it was the Unity game. We had so many things going on. If you were in the stadium, we had some very powerful videos by players and Coach Kleiman. We had a Unity moment right before kickoff that both teams participated in. Players were wearing warm-up shirts with everything from, you know, stand together, love over hate, you know, Black Lives Matter. But when we put the three letters on there, a lot of people immediately associated that with the organization. But every team is going to have a Unity game. Ours happened to be for football, Arkansas State. Volleyball is Friday night against Iowa State. Soccer's got one coming. But after that game, we knew our next home game was going to be Fort Riley Day, so we were going to focus on Big Red One. So that patch was really scheduled to be just for that. Are we going to do other patches? Possibly. Are we going to maybe not have any more patches? Possibly. Again, it's a team-driven thing. And, you know, yes, we got feedback, both positive and negative, but it was designed for part of the unity game, and we knew going to Oklahoma, that's their unity game, so we didn't want to necessarily compete with them, and the players were fine. They've talked about it. They, as long as we're continuing to stand with them against racism and social injustice, and still, we're still going to do the videos in the in-game stuff. We're still going to probably have a unity moment before each game, but whether there's a patch or not, it's not going to happen, at least for the next couple of games, because of, you know, Oklahoma, and then we've got the next home game against for the Fort Riley day.
Have you ruled out the BLM patch again?
You know, I think our players understand that that patch has a tendency to take away from the messaging that they want. Yes, we all agree Black Lives Matter, and we're not moving away from Black Lives Matter. We think it's still very important, but we're probably going to move away from those three letters because the negative that comes with it, because how some people perceive or understand what that organization's about, right, wrong, or indifferent. The players see that people focused on that as opposed to their messaging, which was about, we need to stand against racism. We need to support the lives of our Black athletes, their families, their staff, that they matter. We care about them. That gets lost by using those three letters, and we'll probably move away from that.
Did it ever come up before the decision was made, hey, this could be interpreted as a political organization or a political statement or not? I mean, look, a Fort Riley patch, I don't know. There might be a whole bunch of people that are anti-war or anti-whatever that don't like a Fort Riley patch. Somebody's always going to not like something. I get that. But did you have the discussion, hey, this is also a political organization, this might be offensive?
Well, not so much, because again, it was player driven.
Yeah.
And you know, we have some folks that are kind of guiding our athletes. We have folks that Julian Jones and his staff that work with our players, and you know, they talked about it, that, you know, this organization that's tied to those letters, but that's what they wanted because they didn't see it as an organization. They even say that on the videos. I've said it in many interviews. They saw it as Black Lives Matter, and we want everybody to know that our lives matter. We care about you. And when I've explained that, when I've gotten emails or had a conversation with people, they go, oh, okay, I get it. It's nice to know that you don't support that organization. And there was no propaganda. There was no website. There was no hashtags. It was just those three letters. But that acronym was more negative than the message that we were trying to push, which I thought was extremely positive.
Yes.
By our players and staff.
I agree. The message is extremely positive. I think what triggered a lot of people, to be honest, I'm just an observer of this. When the NBA gave $300 million to the organization, Black Lives Matter, Inc., and then everybody saw that all that money started going to Democrat candidates all over the country, I think that's when people's heads exploded about this thing. They're like, oh, my God, the NBA gave them $300 million, and it's all going to Democrats. I can understand why people would be upset.
Yeah, and then that's a lot of the message is, why are you making a political statement? And the other part was, people want to come to a football game and just watch football, and they don't want to see, you know, whatever messaging. They just, and I don't agree with that. I think our athletes need to have an opportunity to believe in something and be, you know, to voice their opinion. And right now, this is a very, you know, our Black athletes, our coaches, and our Black staff, they're hurting. And they've got stories that will break your heart about situations that they faced growing up with. And maybe it's not so much here in Manhattan or here in the state of Kansas, but where they are from, some of the stories of how they get treated, it's heartbreaking. And we need to stand with them and try to do everything we can to fight as best we can to change the narrative on social injustice and racism.
Yeah, and I think sometimes lost in the shuffle, we forget what college athletics is, that you and your staff and all the coaches, the mission statement really is to help student athletes. That's your job, is to educate these young people, give them a great experience playing a sport, and it's all mentoring and teaching and all those things. And there is a pretty high calling at these universities. We talk about the money and you know, should the players get paid and all these things with the high profile, but really the job there is educating young people and giving them a great experience playing athletics. Ultimately, that's it.
Yeah, and that's true. And this has been a very educational experience for all of them. From, you know, back in March when we shut down everything through the, you know, the George Floyd incident, and you know, our players taking a stand to say, you know what, because we had the gentleman that made the very nasty tweet back in the summer, you know, people want to support him for, you know, the First Amendment. Well, our kids have the same right to the First Amendment, but if you don't like what they're saying, sometimes people get upset about that. So, it's been, I've enjoyed watching our athletes go through it from a maturity perspective because, you know, they're young. They're 17, 18, 19-year-olds. They've had time to really study, you know, in terms of what's going on. And they obviously the internet and social media has so much information out there, right, wrong, or indifferent. But how they mature going through it and how they had, you know, hard conversations and open conversations and, you know, either challenge us as administrators or coaches and how we learned from them and then how they came together. So to me, talking about education and growing up, these kids have done a lot of that since March, and this is just another example of trying to help them through that, and they do a great job on their own. We've got some really talented, bright, very bright young men and women as part of our program and other programs across the country.
All right, let's finish with this. What does basketball look like to you? Are we going to get started on time with college basketball? Is it going to be condensed? What is the timeline, or do you take this right to the end and decide late as well?
No, we've, at least the NCAA, from an NCAA perspective, we've picked a date that when they can start competition, which is November 25th. They've laid out the practice plans as when they can get into their 20-hour work, 20-hour-a-week full practices, which is, I think, the middle of October, or maybe late October. And then we missed a few dates of those early November games that they'll have to make up. We're probably going to play some conference games in December. But we're going to try to get 27 games in. At least that's the max schedule, which is, you know, pretty close to what a normal is. I think we're going to do everything we can to get our conference tournaments in and our in-state tournaments in, maybe smaller fields, maybe some bubbling options when we get to the conference tournament. But I think a lot of people hope that first of the year we have plenty of testing that we can test more regularly, that's less expensive, so we can stay on top of it. But I think you'll see games, again, canceled. And you think basketball, the football's got close contact tracing. Basketball will get shut down pretty quickly with the closeness that they compete. Because, you know, in football, defensive linemen may never touch a defensive back or, whatever. But basketball, they're touching each other, you know, for 2.5 hour practice. So it'll be interesting.
It will be interesting because, you know, I'm sitting here thinking if, you know, a couple, three guys live together and they got one of their teammates or two of their teammates over and there's a couple other guys there playing video games that's a roommate in there or something and that dude has it, you could be in a situation where four or five players are in contact with somebody. You're going to have the same contact rules in basketball, and if you lose five players for 2 weeks, it's shut down, isn't it?
Yeah, that's, I think that's kind of what, you know, the medical folks are talking is just because of how football practice or basketball practices, you could easily lose the whole team for 2 weeks between contact tracing or just having so few players that you have to shut down for 2 weeks if you don't have enough to practice with. That reality, I think, exists pretty high right now.
Do you want to just finish on something fun here, Gene? You want to do something fun?
I always love doing something fun. You got some good fun stuff.
I do. I'm not sure you want to join in. You want to pick a school in the Big 12 that will have the fewest traceable basketball players sitting out?
Oh, man, that's a tough one.
Really? Because only one comes to mind for me. I can already guarantee you I know which team isn't going to sit because of tracing.
I misunderstood your question. Yeah, I thought how many would be the most out. You're saying how many would be the least out. Yes, I'm not going there. Let's just put it that way.
You know what? This is so new, and I'm such a new person. I'm going to stay positive, too. I'm not going to tell anybody which school I'm thinking of, but I guarantee you I know which team will have the fewest players sitting out because of tracing. Now, as far as positives is concerned, everybody's going to sit, but tracing, I know who's not sitting players for that.
I'll let you go with that. I'm just going to, see how it goes this year in basketball.
Okay. I remember this conversation. It's sort of on the record. We didn't say anything, but we definitely talked about it. So there you have it, okay?
You asked me the question, and I waited for your answer. That's what I think is how
it is. That's right, and I didn't give it.
That's right.
And I backed out and didn't give it because I'm a wuss too. That's awesome.
Gene, there you go.
It is so much fun chatting with you, man. You're just a great person to interview, and you're so open and honest and frank about everything. I can't thank you enough for your time, man. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Kevin, and hopefully we get a chance to do it soon. And like you said, talk about Big 12 championships and college football playoffs down the road.
Count me in.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. For additional VIP-only podcasts, live streaming of breaking news, sports wagering tips from the experts, and in-person special events, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron for as little as $5 per month.